Some years back, a certain Unitarian Universalist church offered its pulpit to the Reverend William Sloan Coffin, a well-known liberal minister of the United Church of Christ. The worship committee chose as a congregational hymn the old standard, "Once to Every Man and Nation." That's number 119 in our own hymnal. They chose this to honor Reverend Coffin's book by the same name. Before the service, members concerned about sexist language suggested changing man to soul to bring the hymn more in line with modern practice. Others argued that such a change should not be done as it would be an insult to their esteemed guest. It was finally decided to take the most cautious route and leave the words as they were. That Sunday morning, the congregation sang in the unchanged form, "Once to Every Man and Nation." After the hymn, Reverend Coffin rose and said, "This is the 20th century, folks. Why haven't you updated this hymn to be gender inclusive?" Change is not always easy. It is not easy for individuals. It is not easy for groups. With a governance structure like ours, which relies on committees, you might think that Unitarian Universalist churches would have an easier time with change. That's not my experience. Even in community, change can be very difficult because change always entails loss. There's simply no way around it. We can dull it with drugs, we can deny it in our minds, but there is no escaping the fact that loss is inextricably tied to change. It is part of who we are as existential beings, as simply being human. We can see the dynamics of change clearly in the worship committee's experiments with joys and sorrows. The worship committee does not pretend to know where this will all end. Most likely, the resolution will not please everybody. And it is fully aware that with the suggested changes it makes, that there is loss involved. In a similar way, this congregation has changed simply because it has grown a great deal over the past 20 years of its existence. It is not what it used to be. What started with a few individuals, couples, and families has grown dramatically since 1994. The governance structure was a lot simpler even just 10 years ago. This building easily housed the entire congregation and its various programs, and it felt like a family where everyone knew everyone. This is your story, and it's a beautiful one. What obviously happened, though, is that this family church attracted more families and people. People heard your heart song. They would come and hear the music that came from your hearts. They would feel the genuine warmth that came from your gracious hospitality. They would see you doing good works in the world. And they would also hear the Unitarian Universalist message here, that it's okay to believe what you choose to believe within the context of our seven principles. What that meant is that it is not particular beliefs or belief systems that are salvific, but rather it is love, compassion, and care that make our lives meaningful. Yes, once you chose to be a UU church, you were doomed to grow. And grow you have. Perhaps it is unintentional. It's not as though you conducted a major marketing campaign or did any kind of campaign over the several years to get people here. It's not that you evangelized. You were just being yourselves, singing your heart song. And now here we are with architects who who are here, and consultants, because we do not have enough space to do all the work we wish to do as a congregation with a new mission. We are no longer a family church. When I spoke to Reverend Mary Wellemeyer during the search process, she told me to think of this congregation as a program church. In fact, we are in transition from a pastoral-sized church to a program-sized church. With any transition, with any change, there is loss. So it's important to acknowledge a community's loss and grief. And as mentioned, tomorrow night from 7 to 8 in the evening, we will have a sitting circle here in the sanctuary for anyone who wishes to talk about loss, grief, and change in relation to our church. I would also like to suggest that this kind of transition is an opportunity as well to find creative ways to maintain the intimacy that we fear we might lose as we grow. One way to do this is to continue to find ways to meet in a variety of small groups. One example is small group ministry or covenant groups, which will be starting next week. Another is the peace meals that we've been having. We have several lifespan courses, and congregational life activities are all ways to be together and to promote intimacy. I understand that there are two or three knitting groups that get together regularly. Interesting, I've never been invited, but that's okay. There have been suggestions to create a singles group, a men's group, a young adult group. All of these and more are possible. There's a lesbian potluck this coming week. All of these are possible if people wish to be together in an intimate way. Along with loss, then, change also allows for hope, for vision, and for excitement. I have to say, I am really excited about our program following this morning's service with our architects, Cynthia and Nancy. I am really excited about the many ways we can put our faith into action with our new mission statement. And I see the next 2 to 3 years as a unique chance to integrate our space needs and our mission. The bottom line is that change is inevitable. We all deal with change in different ways, though I believe that change challenges us in a very real and spiritual way. Much like money, our relationship to change is a spiritual issue. Did you get the pun, by the way, money, change? No, all right. It's interesting to me that in the West, perhaps somewhat cynically, we claim that the only things that are certain in life are taxes and death. Whereas Buddhism says, in a wonderful paradox, that one of the great absolutes is impermanence. According to a Hindu website, impermanence is an undeniable and inescapable fact of human existence from which nothing that belongs to this earth is ever free. Decay is inherent in all component things, declared the Buddha. And his followers accepted that existence was a flux and a continuous becoming. This is in part why many Unitarian Universalists find process theology so appealing, because it maintains that everything is in a process of becoming, including sentient beings, revelation, and God itself. It is the basis for the philosophy underlying Rabbi Kushner's popular work from 1981, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. Buddhism often uses water as a metaphor. So life is comparable to a river. It is a progressive moment, a successive series of different moments, joining together to give the impression of one continuous flow, one unified movement, whereas in reality, it is not. The river of yesterday is not the same as the river of today. The river of this moment is not going to be the same as the river of the next moment. This is life. It changes continuously, becomes something or the other from moment to moment. Each person changes from moment to moment. Whenever Sue and I go to Tucson, which we will be doing next week to procure our stones and fossils and rocks, I always think of it as a pilgrimage. Now, I'll be driving, so I never know what each moment will bring and what challenges I will face. I am no longer in the safety of my home and community, and I never know what to expect. It is simultaneously scary and exciting. I also wore this particular tie today because it's Star Trek. To go boldly, split infinitive, to boldly go where no person has gone before. It's a challenge. Think of ourselves as being on the Enterprise for the rest of our lives. Or not. Reverend Robert Fulgham also tells of a time when he was traveling in the summer in Idaho. He was in a pensive mood as he entered Albertson's grocery store. "Watermelon on my mind," he writes. "Big watermelon. Take it home and eat the whole thing." He is walking up and down the aisles of the grocery store and thinking, "All this food, more than I could ever eat or taste, involving thousands of people from all over the world to get it here on the shelves. Infinite in every direction because thousands of other people would come and get it and take it home and eat it at thousands of dinners, and it would fuel their lives to do millions of things, and I could only have just the barest comprehension of this immense complexity." "I picked up the first object in front of me," he says, "a can of tuna fish, and thought about its contents, the can itself, and the label, and all the incredible learning and working, and the machinery, and the processes, and the fishing boats, and fishermen, and factory ships, and trains, and trucks that brought it here from so far away." Walking up the aisle, my eye was caught by an advertising placard which said, "Well, you're not the only one." "Yes," I thought to myself, "I'm not the only one. Not the only one who ever got a flash of the big picture. Not the only one who understands how utterly amazing it all is." So holding on to my sanity and the watermelon and the can of tuna fish with equal care, I stopped at the checkout counter and paid with a $20 bill. I noticed a handwritten note on the little cup where the coins appear at the end of the transaction. Change is always in the air. And you just go with it. Actually, I planned that. Here was yet another unexpected message. "Yes," I thought to myself when I read, "please accept your change. Take it with you." And I thought, "I do accept my change, and the change is yet to come. And I will take my change with me wherever I go." How do we respond to change, and with what attitude? How do we take change with us? I want to say that I will miss you while I am gone. You are to me as a family. 2.5 years we've been together. You're a family no matter how small or how large this community is. The beauty is that wherever we are, wherever we go, we take one another with us, noticing perhaps upon our return the changes that have occurred in one another. But change is inevitable, for life always, always calls us on. Epilogue. Speaking of changes, we now have a new insert for our outdoor wayside pulpit, or curbside pulpit, as some churches say, which will allow us to use letters so that we can change messages, such as the sermon title, on a weekly basis. But perhaps we could still put a message on periodically. Here are a few that we could borrow from other UU churches. 1. Blessed are the apathetic, for they can sleep through anything. 2. I once was directionally challenged, but now am found. 3. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for evil and good are merely logical constructs. 4. I'm not going to hell, and neither are you. And 5. Give me ambiguity, or give me something else. Blessed be, and amen.